Thanks a lot, Les. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Some friendly faces, it's nice to see, and some new ones as well. I have the task of course, introducing what the National Public Health Performance Standards Program is about and kind of its how it's made up and a little bit of its history to bring those who are in the audience up to speed. But importantly, what we wanted to do here today, all three of us, is really describe and kind of get the excitement rolling about where we've gone with the performance standards, both near, far, and in the future, and how diverse people have taken something like the National Public Health Performance Standards and turned it into something for their own community. I think you're going to find some very interesting and very exciting examples here. So that's really where we're really going to try to spend most of our time. But again, I want to describe a little bit about the concept of performance management, why it's quality improvement, why that's important, how the performance standards plays a role. And let's remind ourselves that this is not a CDC program. This is a partnership program, and we've done this from the start, and we want to continue this. We have the American Public Health Association, obviously, ASTO, NACHO, NALBO, National Network of Public Health Institutes, and the Public Health Foundation have been consistent and valued partners from the get-go in this whole program, so I want to recognize them. So what is it about? Briefly, I mean, let's remind ourselves that, in particular in this day and age, it's becoming more and more resonant that this idea of quality improvement is really going to drive performance. How do we do that? Well, we got to come up with the standards, and we spent an awful long time, as you know, building off the essential services to do that in the performance standards. The idea of partnerships, not only the partnership we have with our association members, we try to example this a bit to the states, locals, and tribes, and governance folks, but the idea of a partnership in your community, so valued in the performance standards. And then the idea of continuous quality improvement. And lastly, but not at least, and becoming much more important, this whole idea of the science-based for public health practice improvement. And as we see now being challenged at CDC with a new director, this is becoming very important, the whole concept of public health systems and services research. So I won't go through each one of these dates, but keep in mind that performance standards have been around for quite some time. It certainly got its effective launch in 2002, but after 4 years of a lot of hard work from folks who preceded my involvement, I came around CDC in 2002. And of course, we're into the version 2 instruments. And our panelists to my far right, your left, will give us the far future then about where we're going with the performance standards. But it's been a comprehensive development process, and I think one thing that we've done, and I've noticed this at working at CDC and then going out to states and locals, is that how we've conducted our business in developing the performance standards and using the peer network out there among state practitioners, local practitioners, the people on the ground doing public health, to help us develop the model standards and the measurements and the metrics has really been the way to do business. It turns out a great deal of our success has been in that manner. And I'm proud to say that that exact sort of spirit of engagement is exactly how FAB, the Public Health Accreditation Board, has gone about its business as well. So I think we've got the right type of developmental process in place. So the four key concepts, let's not forget these as we go through, is this idea we're built on the 10 essential public health services that give us our backbone and framework. We, distinguishing ourselves from accreditation here, we focus on the overall public health system, so it's about building that partnership. It's an optimal level, you know, what is the model standard? Where are we going? Kind of describing the very best you can be, and then taking that information as you assess and turn it into actual actionable items in a quality improvement process. So, I can remember first seeing, this is an updated version, this is the IOM version of a public health system. We all remember the egg slide. Everybody remember the egg slide about the public health system? Of course. Because when I started in public health in the mid to early 80s, I mean, the concept of a public health system wasn't out there. Now we almost take it for granted. And this one's meant to display kind of two systems. Of course, it's the one around in the big ring is what we think about. When you're out in a state or a community or you work in a tribal health department, you have to have all of these and more. These are just representative part of your system and participating. But let's not forget the vertical governmental system. That's kind of the orange box there in the middle, which is a huge focus now, trying to make sure we have our assets and performance in place for ourselves, us all, but then we engage everybody else into the process. And we think the definition of a strong, well-functioning public health system is important. And more important these days, the whole idea of having the resource sharing, just not communicating with partners, but actually collaborating, actually in a cooperative way, I think is so important to the success. We have huge challenges. You can only do it with an effective public health system. These are new instruments. I know they're on display all over the place. When you go in the exhibit hall, I saw that today, which was kind of nice to see. We think they're very readable, usable. Everything's electronic, of course. You go right on our website and download all this stuff. So the idea of, at the heart and soul of all this, goes all the way back to Turning Point and some of their good work by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, of trying to get public health people to think about the fact that you have got to have performance management in your agency, in your public health system, and in your programs. This one kind of represents sort of the high arching level about it, but it makes sense. Define yourself, get the performance standards of the one quadrant, start thinking about performance, measurement, how that measurement all alone does not mean the end of the road. You've got to have a quality improvement process, and then report on that, take advantage of that information, somehow get everybody else engaged in what you do. So I want to focus just for a second then on that whole idea of the quality improvement process, simplified into plan, do, check, act, but as everyone knows, this is not universally, how do I say this graciously, less instilled in public health. Some agencies, some local, tribal, state, they really embrace this and they're all about it. Flint, Michigan comes to mind. But others, it's lip service, and they really don't understand that at a program level, at the agency level, and even at the system level, you can perform quality improvement and it's going to make a big difference. Don't want to put a lot of data out there, but it's APHA. We feel like we have to have a data slide or two. Here's an example. When people do get reports back to sort of take advantage of the information then in a quality improvement process. So you're going to get something like this when you do an assessment. I mean, this is the way it looks. Confidence bars and so forth. And this one nicely shown, you know, where you're doing the, you know, where it's going down in and of course, not all essential services are equal. You are performing better in some, you're performing worse in some. And the reports we publish out, and I want to acknowledge the Public Health Foundation's good work in that regard, come to you electronically in hard copy as well still, I guess if you request them, right? And it's meant to be a tool, an effective tool, to get your leadership team engaged in where's your highest level of activity, where's your lowest, make your strategic choices. And of course, this 2x2 tables to simplify that kind of concept where you think you have a high value target out of those 10 essential services, one that really matters. Again, they're not all equal in a sense. And then you're scoring either high or low in that. This sort of a tool gives you the advantage of saying, all right, where do we put ourselves? Where do we migrate from? And in this, shows you quite clearly, if you've got something that the current level of performance is not good, yet it's a perceived high level, you need to move in that direction. We've had good success with it. This is a voluntary program, remember, and remember version one was 600 and some questions or something. We've skinnied it down, probably be even more concentrated as we move into the future. But it's been really well accepted in a variety of locations and states and so forth. These maps are meant to represent the latest and greatest, 28 states plus DC. Some of them repeated it, of course. We're into that kind of cycle. The local use equally, some states have done both state and local at the same time. We encourage that with governance if we can get that to be done. And we haven't had the greatest uptake, as people know, been involved in the program, there are a lot of you here in the audience, with what the governance instrument could or should do. But I think public health is now getting, I think, a lot more acknowledgement about the importance of boards of health and the governance piece, having the community and the political will to move public health forward. And so that we think that the governance instrument is probably going to be something that's going to really take off here. So that's the background of the National Public Health Performance Standards Program. And again, as Dr. Beisch said later, we'll have plenty of time. So if you kind of record a question or two or something you want to have clarified, we can get to it then. But I want to talk about how here in the U.S., we've had some really interesting successes that the communities that took on the performance standards were able to do, going through all of that difficulty of bringing partners together, assessing, getting into some kind of quality program. What was their action plan? What did they do with that information? Some states changed their core laws and actually instilled the idea of 10 essential public health services or building infrastructure or capacity. Some have gone through huge Colorado improvement planning exercises that then led him to even more greater and interesting outcomes. And then the whole idea of new partnerships. And not just for the moment of assessment, bringing everybody together, but here I'll show some examples of where these partnerships have become sustained and quite effective. So let's talk about some of these. So in New Hampshire, we love talking about New Hampshire. We're probably going to be talking about New Hampshire a lot in the next 2 years, aren't we, on the political scene. They got engaged 2005 with the performance standards, and holy cow, that just took right off. But of course, leadership was important. And they came out of this whole idea with this council and this idea of managing it with everyone kind of participating. And what then they came out with was legislation introduced. And the idea here is we're going to have a true public health improvement action plan in place. Now, you notice they started this in 2005. Look at the enacting date. These things don't happen. These are, you know, major shifts in thinking and in policy. So you have to be a little bit patient, but, you know, monitoring the implementation of existing public improvement plans and making sure they actually do something. I mean, that's kind of revolutionary when you think about it. And they've got a lot of accomplishments. You can go online, and I've done this. They've got a wonderful example there still, what they did in 2008 then about this. And I think when you think about the winnable battles, CDC's always talking about the winnable battles. I mean, look at here. This was in 2008, and they're exactly resonant with what we're doing. Oops, sorry. Let me turn that off. And what's going on with targeting the priorities in public health. Here we got tobacco, physical activity, nutrition, alcohol, nothing really different than what's going on in New Hampshire, but this allows them the opportunity to bring partners to focus on that. Again, the idea of sharing resources and bringing everybody to bear. It's the attention in the spotlight that something like what New Hampshire has done that's allowed effective action. So let's talk about Illinois. 2004, 2009, they conducted the state assessment. Again, right into the whole legislative process, and coming up with a state health improvement plan with real targets, real deliverables, and so forth. They really went after the essential public health service number 5. Here, let me get into this. Sorry the slides get a little bit busy and stuff, but you know we're proud of what happened here. So they came up with a whole state health improvement plan and an act of public law there. Just not only creating the priorities, dig down here a little bit deeper, the whole idea of specific priorities for the disparities that you see. And oftentimes in public health, we have a difficult time translating the real health issue into the disparity issue. Here's an example where that was effective. And I, you know, when you start having public hearings and you get the legislative process involved, I got to tell you, that really starts to then engage the whole force of public health and any tool, performance standards, or whatever you're using in your community that allows you that opportunity to get onto the legislative debate cycle is absolutely, absolutely effective and efficient. You can't read this, but we have it up here just to show that they have a really interesting, they sort of pioneered a little bit of this work, and we appreciate that, how a state can do sort of that state health improvement planning a lot like a local does, a la the MAP process, mobilizing action through planning and partnership. And so now that we've got, if you start to look at some of the standards coming out for accreditation or the expectations of accrediting a health department, you are going to be expected to have these community health improvement plans or state health improvement plans as part of your prerequisites. So this pioneering work done back in states like Illinois and others has really allowed us to kind of see what's possible for some of these other opportunities. Indiana, back 2007, same idea here. A whole quality improvement program. We felt obligated to highlight Indiana because, you know, Judy Monroe has come to CDC and we really want to brag about her good work back then. But I got to tell you, they really did get everybody to think about this in a manner that they had not done before. And though she was a fairly new health officer at the time, you know, every predecessor has had the difficult time of trying to take state. A lot of states have this difficulty, state health department initiatives to the local level if they're not all connected, and they're not always all connected. She was able to do that, and I really give her a lot of credit for her leadership in this regard. And they have this FISQIP thing, which is still, I believe, correct? It's still right. It's still happening. I don't know why that keeps going off. I turned that thing off before. I hate technology. I got it. where was it? Oh, and how they then able to sort of institutionalize this. Really, also, I will say Indiana distinguished themselves for bringing in Purdue University and some real science people. So here's an opportunity, not just the public health folks thinking about how we assess, what does it mean, where are we going, but they went over and partnered with their university. And I got to tell you how important I think that's becoming, where you engage your academic partners the best you can, the School of Public Health, whoever's in your community, to help you with some of these more difficult analysis techniques that get the data right, get the assessment correct, and then, again, when you're speaking from data and engaging partners, that becomes a hugely important opportunity. And some of what they've come by here, I mean, this is pretty amazing what they're doing, and again, they're still participating to a very high degree, even though leadership has transitioned. This happens, of course, in public health at the state level quite frequently. Think about what's happening now with all the new governors. But they've been able to sustain this, and I think that's something that not only Indiana, but a lot of the other states have been able to do, is take this. It's not a one-time shot in the dark. It's somehow you've got to institutionalize what the process is about to be able to really see the fruits down the road. And I think their whole QI planning activities, from what I understand what's going on there, has just really brought cohesion and brought opportunities to improve the public health system, but also to sustain it. And that's very difficult. How are we doing on time? I just want to do a quick check-in. Thank you. Now here's my last example, by the way. Got to be a little diverse. We got to jump up to Alaska. We had the good fortune to go up to Alaska, Teresa and I, and sit and listen to the folks describe what happened in Homer, Alaska, around using the performance standards and how, people have been to Alaska, you know, it's a challenging community to begin with their public health issues and problems, particularly outside Anchorage or any of the concentrated, urban areas. And how do you then take communities like that where the sense of individualism is so strong and the poverty problems, the diversity of concerns are so great? Not easy. And so we are wondering how, like with MAP, and everybody know, I hope you understand, the performance standards is one of the four assessments within the MAP process. How do they end up actually being effective in that kind of a community? I mean, it's a difficult task. Well, they're very proud of what happened. They came through with the very first collaborative effort that had ever been done in that community. And as I understand it, their excitement was about opening the eyes to people who were not ever thought of themselves as being public health practitioners. Even some in the medical community, apparently, this was a real awakening moment for this community. They did come up, of course, with a community health improvement plan, went right on through, and I believe when we were there, they were starting to talk about the excitement about actually implementing the community improvement plan. And if we had time, I think we could really delve into how they were unique in how they got everybody engaged, sustained it, kept it going, and now they're coming out with something that I think will be a model. When we were there with the nursing conference, the feeling was, people from all over the state of Alaska were sitting there listening to them describe this, the feeling was that they were pioneering for the state a way to do MAP and the performance standards in a manner very effective. It didn't take an inordinate amount of everybody's resource and time. We're always concerned about that, staff time dedicated to an assessment, quality improvement process. But they felt the benefits at the back end far outweighed the investment of time and attention. And I got to tell you, sitting there among the folks in Alaska and seeing that their eyes open up to realize in other communities they could do the same thing. And so there was great value in that. I think we're getting pretty close to the bottom of this. So what were some of the priorities out of such a Homer, Alaska process? I mean, well, the healthy lifestyle choices, everybody knows that's a huge public health issue. And they really jumped on it. You know, they started to get the schools involved. They started to get the local councils for their food policy and getting to think about they could actually make and direct change from the perspective that public health wants. Addressing substance abuse. Well, that's a huge Alaska problem. It's a problem everywhere, but particularly so there. And how that kind of translates into a risk factor for so many other public health issues. You know, child abuse, domestic violence, and so forth. These were huge, they're huge concerns everywhere, but in Alaska, they didn't know quite how to bring all the parties together to address these things. These things have now turned out to be very successful. And of course, the idea of connecting community resources, I think we've talked about that, but that kind of lays the groundwork for almost every public health priority you choose, is to bring those folks together. Somebody takes the lead, other people join together, and off they go. So some of the lessons learned then, and then I'll be done with my portion of the talk. The whole idea of the systems approach has really, I think, become inculcated in public health, and rightfully so. That collaboration to get the assessment completed and get a community health improvement plan, sure, but the long-term benefits are huge. You got to follow up on your, on any performance improvement priorities. It does no good, as we all know, to put a list together and hand it out to the county commissioners or the governor or somebody and just say, this is what we want to do, unless you've got the leadership and the will to make it happen. By the way, with having a partnership and a coalition, I know back in my days here in Boulder, Colorado, that allows you political cover. If you're just the health officer saying, oh, we got to address these issues in our community, but you've got a whole, you've got everybody who's a partner in public health, and some of the big players are there, then it gives you the political, if you will, cover to get right on it. Everybody can argue about the measures to monitor and manage, the ones we've chosen, the model standards we've built, but, you can make this work in every community. And I think the diversity of examples here today will show you, however adapted, these kinds of tools and techniques work very effectively. You got to link the measurement to the improvement. I think that's kind of what we've built into this process. I know accreditation is going to do the exact same thing. What measures gets done, that kind of a thing. Always plan. Yeah, just don't, we're action-oriented people, that's fine, but some planning, of course, make sure that action is well defined and the strategies are appropriate. And let's make sure that as much as we think public health is the end-all for anything that goes on in the world, the other partner organizations actually have other priorities besides yours. They may have come to the table, and they may have said all the nice, cool things about kumbaya, we're all together, yep, we're going to go after domestic violence or whatever as the priority. They've got their priorities, and I think then, if you're a smart health leader, public health leader, you will engage in some of their priorities too. Because more than likely, if it's an organization that you've brought to the table for the performance standards, stakeholder meetings and so forth for the assessment process and the development of an action plan, then they might want to invite you to their table when they're doing theirs, and that has huge advantages. That's it for my point, and we'll talk with you all later. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
Unless it rings, then I'll adopt it. I'll impound it. Good afternoon, everybody. I hope you've made it through lunch and are not going to fall asleep because I've put on some darkly colored slides. What I'm going to try and do today is I'm going to try and run on several levels. I want to talk a bit about philosophy, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about politics. And finally, I'm going to talk about what we've done in Israel, because it's all tied in together, as you know. How do I exchange the slides? Okay, great. Okay, so we took the public health performance standards to Israel, and there are several points I want to make before we talk about what we've done there. There are several things that I want you to remember. First, the Israeli system is the same as the U.S. system, with several small differences. If you remember the slide that shows the public health system, public health systems are the same all over the world. No matter how the organization is, no matter what level of organization you look at, but basically you have the same partners that comprise the system. The same organizations, the same academia and governmental organizations and NGOs, it's all the same. So you can port the concept of a public health system to wherever you go. And when you do that, when we take the system and we want to adopt one concept of, and basically we'll start by adopting the essential public health functions. You want to port it from the US, you want to port it to Israel, you want to port it to Eastern Europe, you want to port it to Africa. You must remember God and the devil are in the details. And what do I mean by that? First of all, you have to, what we found in Israel, the basic problem was the vocabulary. You have to transfer the terminology that is being used in the US to Israel. If you do that, you will not certainly not be calling the essential public health services services. You'll be calling them functions, because if you call them services, then it's all about who is going to provide those services. And if you're going to be talking about who's going to provide what, then you're going into political grounds. So unless you want to be shot out of the sky before you've really taken off, you want to think about the terminology. You want to think about the fact that when you adopt a new terminology, a new vocabulary, you have to have all your partners understand the vocabulary and have them all on the same basic concepts. It's a process. It's a process that means it's not a wham bam thank you ma'am thing. It's something that is ongoing, that even though you start at some point and you might not get to where you want to at the start, it might not work out in the first few months, it might not work out in the first year or the first 2 years, because people will be wary of a new concept. People will be wary of doing something that entails effort on their part, but you know, you keep hammering at it and you talk to the people and you tell them what possible benefits they will reap, and you use the right words. In Israel, if you say, well, it will help you to improve your emergency preparedness, all of a sudden people will start listening more carefully than otherwise. Why Israel? Why pour the system to Israel? Well, the answer is why not? I mean, Israelis answer every question with another question. So, and basically that applies to any other country in the world. Why not pour the idea? If the concept is valid, why not pour it to some other place? And here's where I go philosophical. Why is the concept valid? The concept is valid not because of the tool itself, but because of the concept behind the tool. First of all, you need to have some kind of measurement in public health, because if you're only basing your measurements in public health on the outcomes, you're going to be waiting for 20 years before you see the outcomes of your program. We can't do that. I mean, not if you want to justify having money flow into public health. And then, of course, there's the political issue, and I will say something that Dennis told me, and I'm not sure he wants me to quote that, but I will. He said, basically, if you're going to the lawmakers and the politicians, and you say, this is what you're funding the ability to have a surveillance system, and the next year they want to cut your budget in half, then you can go back to them and say, well, if you're going to cut my budget in half, what is the model standard that you want me to cut off? Are you really willing to stand up and say to the public that because we're going to cut the budget, we're not going to be able to meet the standard once you've made it a standard? It sort of forces politicians into some kind of accountability in terms of public health. Okay. Some words about the Israeli public health system. It's a one-level system. Unlike the U.S., and I've been learning for the past few days about the diversity, the huge diversity that you have in the U.S. in terms of the configuration of the system and the multitude of organizations that are active in the system, Israel is much simpler. It's a small population country. Wouldn't probably amount to, I mean, there are several districts in the U.S. which are bigger than Israel. So what we have is a one-level system. We have, in terms of public health services, we have the government level, which is the Ministry of Health, and it's represented at local level by the districts or the regions. Besides the government, we have the medical organizations, which are mostly the major medical organization is the Israeli Medical Association, which encompasses the doctors, and they're an influential organization in terms of the politics. The organization I chair, the Israeli Association of Public Health Physicians, is within that medical association, I think at the moment the most influential group, in terms of public health policy, because whenever public health policy comes in under debate in the parliament, and the medical association is required to give some kind of opinion, they always appeal to us. I mean, okay, what do we know? We're doctors, what do we know about public health? So we have this section, the public health physicians, let's ask them what they think. Then there are, of course, the other public organizations, not as many as in the US, but representing various interests, environmental interests, other, of course, we must remember that when we talk of the system, there are other government entities as well. There's education, there's welfare. The NGOs, as I said, representing the various interests, mostly environmental, some also representing health interests, like the patients' organization. And I've described the system. You have a local level, you have the hospitals, we have 26 hospitals in Israel, of which 13 are governmental, the rest are non-governmental. We have the regional divisions, and the regions, several of them are divided into districts. I'll go through it quickly. When we take the concept of the essential public health functions, the original concept of 10 functions, when it was transferred to national system countries, international, then we sort of, you had a revision of that into 11 functions. I'm not sure about the logic of having an 11 functions, because 10 functions kind of resounds better. It's sort of like the 10 commandments. It's more tangible. It works better, especially if we're going to do some, we're always, the people who are advocates of that, always kind of preaching, so it's easier to preach for 10 commandments than 11. When we translated that, we took the essential functions and we tried to translate that into Israel. Of course, every country, like in a way perhaps every state in the US, wants to do their own thing with the essential public health functions. They want to make it more applicable to their specific situation. So we wanted to make that more applicable to our specific situation. So we added a word here, we added a word there. We ended up with the same 10 functions, but of course, a lot more words to describe the same thing. And in this, you can see that how they interconnect. I mean, you can order them whichever way. Basically, any country will end up with the same concept, because we are talking about the elements that institute the core essence of public health. And the core essence of public health is the same wherever you go. Okay. The prior phase to implementing what we did was a PhD thesis that assessed how well we were doing on the public health functions by interviewing decision makers. And it sort of mapped the difference between how important those functions were perceived to be vis-a-vis how well we were doing on them. And it's of course a very subjective assessment, because it was not done on a basis of a standard or on the basis of a structured in-depth questionnaire such as the public health performance standards. But it kind of gives you an idea that people were interested in that even before we started working with the tool itself. The concept of taking the tool, the idea behind using that specific tool, is the fact that, as I said before, you don't want to wait for the outcome assessment. You want to do a process assessment. You want to have some process measurements, because we suppose, on the basis of the basic models of inputs, process, outputs, that if you're working, if you're doing the right things, if you're doing the right things right, then you'll end up with the right results. And since you don't want to wait for the right results, you want to check how well you're doing the right things. And we've agreed on the right things because the right things are the essential functions, okay? So that's the basis. And assessing how well you're doing them is what the process measurement is all about. We took that to the northern region because we didn't want to go to the entire state of Israel. If you want to do it at a state level, if you want to do something like that at a regional level, of course, it's always easier than doing it at a state level because at a state level, it also becomes political. At a regional level, you're doing your own thing in your own little acre of the earth. Nobody really watches you, and you can start a process ongoing that will eventually grow into something that is nationwide. And that is what we want to do, because we don't want to stay with the northern region. We want to do it statewide. And the idea behind doing it statewide, and this is where I'm going into politics, is because we want to have the right infrastructure for the public health system in Israel. We want to reform that infrastructure. We want to reorganize public health. We want to revitalize it on the basis of performance management. So we took it to the northern region, which is a large region in terms of Israel, 700,000 people, divided into five districts, has four HMOs active. The four HMOs are all over Israel. They cater for the primary care for the population of Israel. And hospitals, there is a larger variety of hospitals in the northern region. There are actually seven hospitals, but we focused on three because logistics, basically logistical problems. Getting everybody to the same table would take too much. So we took the three hospitals that were private hospitals, and we got them on board. What we did was, first of all, you can't do anything without the money. So the CDC was gracious enough to offer us the money through the University of Kentucky. And we started with a small amount of money just to have the first phase of assessment. We did a translation. We took the version 2 tools. We took the version 2 public health performance standards, and we translated it. Of course, that takes time, and it's difficult to validate before you do the first assessment. And basically, you will validate it after the assessment because you'll see how well you're doing. And the words don't really matter. It's the concepts. Then we had, in May 2010, we had the first workshop in Nazareth, Dr. Vasireddy, who's here, he led the workshop, and we got the district management teams from the five districts and the representation from the region to come together, and we introduced the concept, we introduced the vocabulary, and it was easy for them to accept what the core business of public health is. And when they sat at the table and started looking through the Hebrew tool, they started realizing that basically they can break down what they're doing into a lot of yes or no questions. Do you have that in place or don't you have that in place? And if you don't have that in place, then it gets you to thinking, why don't I have that in place? Do I need to? If I need to and I don't have it, then I need to do something about it. Then we had the second workshop, which was in October 2010, where we got together the four HMOs and the three private hospitals. Of course, to them, the whole vocabulary is a bit bizarre because they're not used to thinking public health. They're used to thinking patient management. And you get them to buy into the concept of the public health functions and their role in the public health functions by saying, well, if you're an HMO, you probably, to some extent, the district level, the governmental organization will be doing some kind of health promotion. But isn't the HMO doing most of the health promotion activity? And you get them to answer yes, because obviously they are. And then you ask them about their emergency preparedness. I mean, are you doing it on your own, or are you part of a system that does the emergency preparedness. And they realize, as they go along, they realize that they are an inherent part of the system, whether they are doing more of some activity or less, but they are an inherent part of the system. And it's all about the partnership. And going back to the politics, it's not about who provides the service. It's about the system providing the function. So if we all realize that we're part of that system and we need to do whatever the function entails, we can split the job. I mean, you're doing this because you're getting paid to do this. I'll do the other thing because I'm getting paid, or if I'm not getting paid to do that, if I'm not getting the budgets to do that, but at least maybe I have the professional workforce that is required. So maybe I can do that sort of like by the way. And what we're looking for is, once we got everybody to admit the fact that they are part of a system, we want to have them sit down together and start thinking, now that you've mapped your gaps, and they've been mapping their gaps, what are you going to do about it? Maybe they can't do anything about the gap. Maybe the HMO can't do anything about its health promotion gap. But then maybe somebody else from the system can pick up where the HMO leaves off. Maybe there is some other, maybe we can all go together and say, well, we're all not doing an adequate job on health promotion. We need the budget. And not really care about who gets the budget for that, whether it's the HMO, the government organization, or some other organization. But somebody has to get the budget, and we'll all chip in together to do the work. How am I doing on time? Okay, as far as the results are concerned, the primary results based on the district's assessment has shown that we're doing lower than expected, than what we should, on education and empowerment, on evaluation of services, and on research and innovation. The fact that we're doing badly on research and innovation is obvious. I mean, we're all busy working on the immediate and the urgent rather than the important. And to a large extent, that is, and that ties in with your slide, that is something that the performance assessment does. It sort of maps out to you what is important and takes you from the mindset of working on a day-to-day basis on the emergent. You want a plan. You want to have a plan in place, because if you don't have a plan in place, you know where you are, maybe, but you certainly don't know where you're going. And we've seen that we're doing better on the classical EPI items of diagnose and investigate. We're doing well on the enforcement of laws. Well, we're the government. We're supposed to be doing well on that. I mean, that's what we're getting funded mostly for. In terms of the assurance of workforce, geez, I don't know. I want to take you again to the philosophical. You see, the way I see it, if you look at the performance standards, they look at the system. Within the system, you have the agency, right? You have each agency operates within the system. And to examine the agency, you have the accreditation process. We don't have an accreditation process in Israel, but you're talking about accreditation here in the US. And beyond, I mean, at a lower level than the agency, there's the individual. And what you're looking for when you look at the individual, you're looking at competencies and training the workforce in terms of competency. And you can discern two levels of competency. One is the knowledge element, and that's where the schools of public health come into play, and their programs, which can be assessed and of course, accredited. And there is the actual workforce competency. I mean, the way you are actually doing your work. You've got the knowledge. Do you have the attitudes? Do you have the skills required beyond the knowledge? And we need to do some accreditation on that as well. So when we're talking about the assurance of workforce, well, maybe they do have the knowledge, but are they doing their job well? It all ties back into the essential public health functions, because if you don't have a competent workforce, you're not going to be able to perform well, neither in the assessment nor in the accomplishment of the functions that you want to accomplish. Okay, so, you know, we're pleased with where we are at the moment, but of course it mapped out where we need to go forward with. And as I said before, once you ask the people, how do they feel after going through this assessment process, it gets them thinking. It gets them thinking, and I can tell you that what happened, it sort of tied in and it clarified. We have this community program at the moment for smoking cessation, a regional level program. And the regional program involves all the elements of the public health system. But nobody who, when they sat and mapped out what they want to do in terms of smoking cessation, nobody's thought, well, this is the public health system, let's get everybody in the system together around this plan. They just mapped out anybody who might have anything to do with smoking. And when they saw this process, they said, well, basically what we did together around this program of smoking cessation, we got the public health system working on that. And we can take the same concepts and the same methods and duplicate that to dealing with obesity, to dealing with any other kind of health problem. We just get the public health system to work together, to cooperate, and then we can duplicate it, duplicate the process, and you already have the interaction in place. So you have everybody sitting together at the same table. 1 week they can be discussing obesity, the next week they can be discussing smoking, the next week after that they can be discussing any other topic, but you have them talking as a system. Well, the last point is something that you'll find anywhere you go. I mean, you take the American system to any place in Europe and they're like, oh, so this is American. It doesn't work in Europe. No, it doesn't work in Europe. Well, it does. It does, because the European system is basically the same. The same public health system, everywhere you go. You're wary of the fact that somebody else did it and they're hundreds of miles away from where you are. Okay, take the tool, translate it into your own language, add a word here, add a word there, you're going to end up with the same thing. It's transferable. That's it. Thanks for listening.
Well, hopefully what you have heard so far helps you become convinced, if you didn't walk into the room convinced, that the performance standards offers a suite of tools that can work for you no matter where you are. Well, what I'm going to talk about a little bit is how these tools can also work for you in the future of 2012, when we roll out a new iteration of performance standards tools, and you can be among those who said, I heard it first at APHA in 2010. So some of you know and have heard today that performance standards, the focus of the program is on strengthening the system. Many, or maybe only some of you, may be asking, why focus on the system now, when so many state and local public health systems in this country are suffering so mightily under the recession? Why divert time, energy, attention from the agency's very act of survival to strengthen the system? Our response to that would be that there may, in fact, be no better time. As resources diminish at the state and local level, the performance standards can offer a way to take a look at the system and make some critical and hopefully proactive decisions about where do services best belong. Which partner, which part of our system is best equipped to provide particular services? Where does the agency really need to focus and foster its support for the services that are most critical for it to provide through these times? So that is certainly something to think about as we move through the recession and face these kinds of tough choices. There are increasing service demands at the same time. No single agency can answer those demands on their own, so it's a great opportunity to work with partners, identify partners, look at the system, and determine how do we together address the needs that we see present here. We've known and recognized for a long time in public health that the problems we attempt to solve and address are complex problems. So they require the focus and attention of a system. Again, no single agency alone. And also, as we look at the service delivery that we do, the policies that we develop, they do not happen within the siloed walls of an agency. They do not happen typically at the urging of one particular individual or organization within a community. They occur and are directed most easily when systems are working together to focus attention on them. And of course, this year we've seen the introduction of some new opportunities in public health through health reform. And you want to talk about something that is multi-layered and involves multiple partners and systems, that would be health reform. So understanding the system, where it's performing well, where it has the opportunity to improve, can really help move those collaborations further. Okay, the framework for improving the performance of public health. We've talked a lot already today about how the health department is a component of what we do, how the system and community partners and the workforce, but the framework that we're all speaking from is that investing in those and strengthening those really builds the operational capacity within our systems and within our agencies, which really benefits and impacts every public health activity that we're doing, no matter whether it occurs in the agency or whether it's occurring with some other community partner. So ultimately, that leads to better health outcomes. Improved health status, reduced disparities, the things that motivate us and keep us coming to work. So the end of the day, the case is investments in the system and in the infrastructure pay the big dividends where we want to see them in our programs and outcomes. So over the past year, CDC and its performance standards partners began talking about the next iteration, if you will, of performance standards. Dennis shared how development started in 1998. The first version came out in 2002. We had an updated version in 2007. It's important to continue evolving and addressing the needs of the changing systems that we have. So where we are, what we've begun talking about, and as I said, we're talking about it first here, is that we're looking at a re-engineering that will sustain and continue to enhance the performance standards as a tool for systems building and assessment improvement activities. So through re-engineering, we're going to assure that the standards remain current and cutting edge, reflecting today's public health practice and the very best of today's public health practice, that the instruments themselves become more streamlined. And by streamlined, we mean a couple of things. We certainly mean shorter, more user-friendly, easier to use, less public health jargon for our systems partners. And ultimately, the re-engineering leads us to a comprehensive and seamless package of tools that effectively promotes the process of systems engagement, so how we identify and bring partners together, but also the process of performance assessment, and then how we move from that assessment into action, into improvement action more specifically. So you've probably noticed my language, re-engineering. Why not updating? Why not refining, revising? What we're communicating or hoping to communicate with the term re-engineering is really this very last point, that we're not just taking a look at the assessment instruments themselves, but rather the whole process. So from the process of when you first begin thinking about doing a performance standards assessment, what's the context for that? Who should be involved? Going through the assessment process itself, and then on the other side, what do we do with our results? How do we use them in a really meaningful and helpful way? So absent a crystal ball, it's important to have something to guide the reengineering process. And for us, that will happen as we address the strengths and weaknesses and challenges that have been noted for us or that we've identified through our program evaluation data. We've had a couple of evaluation studies through performance standards, and actually every user who submits data into the performance standards data and reporting system also submits some evaluation data on their process and what they realize from that process. So using that data along with user feedback in the form of key informant interviews and stories that we hear almost daily from users, such as South Kenai Peninsula and Alaska that Dennis shared earlier, we'll go through the reengineering process to build on those strengths and address those challenges and weaknesses. There are also opportunities in the field that it's important for us to take a look at how we can align and strengthen with those. Most notably, the advent of public health agency accreditation is probably one of the most frequently asked questions we hear these days, is how will these two initiatives complement and work together with each other, and I will address that in just a few minutes. But first, I want to tell you what's not going to change. The unchanging core, if you will, of the performance standards program is that the four concepts, as they were from the beginning, remain through this reengineering process. That is, they're framed around the 10 essential services, they focus on the system, they describe an optimal level of performance, and they are intended to catalyze performance improvement. So here are some of the data that we're responding to or will respond to in the reengineering process. One of the neat things from these studies from ASTO and NACHO is that we found out that the performance standards tools are being used as intended to measure performance and or to assess performance and catalyze performance improvement in state and local public health system. So we want to continue to build on that. Where systems have told us it's working for them and they have been able to use it for these purposes, we want to ensure that the reengineered process continues to do. We have heard, and evaluation studies have borne this out, that one of the strongest attributes of going through the performance standards process, assessment process, is the systems building aspects of it. We've heard, and actually been present to witness this in many states, that sometimes having the partners actually come together, system partners, come together for the assessment process is the first time those partners have physically been together in the same room. So that's pretty transforming for a public health system to have that experience and make those visible connections. Sometimes there is sort of a core of usual partners, usual suspects that have been longtime partners, related and known to one another. This is an opportunity to sort of extend the table, to make more room at the table and broaden the partnership. So we don't want to lose what people tell us they gain from this, the opportunity to leverage staff support and staff resources across the system to focus on priorities that are important to everyone, to pool system resources, to bring in more money where the public health agency or other agencies perhaps are partners, and to coordinate decision making on common priorities. So these are, again, from some of our evaluation studies, some of the opportunities that we want to build on related to improvement and planning results and activities that system partners engage in. We'll continue to see these themes as we go through the reengineering process. So our goal is to build on the strengths, to minimize the challenges. So what we have heard in conversation and key informant interviews is that some of the strengths of the process are the focus on the public health system. We've heard that's really one of the most valuable components of going through this process, the opportunity to identify the partners, bring them together. We've also heard, as far as the actual assessment itself, it's one of the biggest challenges when going through the assessment, to keep the attention on the system overall versus becoming a little bit more siloed in responding to some of the assessment questions. So one of the challenges that we want to take on is how can we keep that very valuable part of the process and minimize the tendency, if you will, to think about agency activity as opposed to system activity. So we're beginning to look at what that might look like in the re-engineered version. So again, continuing with the strengths, the tool that it is for partner engagement, building on that, continuing the momentum around that, the emphasis on quality improvement, and especially for the next year and beyond, the preparation that can occur for public health agency accreditation as a result of engaging in a process where performance is assessed and improvement is encouraged and catalyzed as a result. It's a really good connection and a good activity for state and local systems to engage in. So the complexity of the instrument, I've mentioned that, but we continue to hear, even as Dennis pointed out, version 2 did become a simpler, more streamlined tool. There's still room to improve there. We intend to make that improvement. As Ehud noted, language is one of the very first things. If we're having partners in a room together, we need to have common and simple language to speak together. And then another challenge that we have heard from our system partners is that there's sometimes a lag or a lapse or a challenge to overcome in moving from the assessment phase, which people got really excited about, into the improvement phase of the process. So we're looking critically at what we can do through tools or guidance around the process to help people make that transition more easily. And also, we want to incorporate some of the tips from our most successful users. Dennis has shared some of those in the stories that he went over earlier. But you know, some of those is the broader the system partnership that we engage, the better the process. So going back to new partners in addition to existing partners is a great opportunity for that. How do we encourage and continue to motivate that? Conducting the assessment within the context of a state or community health improvement process or quality improvement effort really grounds from the start, grounds the process in a larger context in a way that is helpful, gives direction, gives meaning to the reason folks are being asked to come together. So the more clear and the more that is communicated from the beginning all the way through, the easier it is for people to see how they fit in, how they can participate and get excited about the activities that can continue the performance assessment improvement process. Another thing we have heard and sites that have done exceptionally great activity is that they've had strong facilitators through the assessment process. So we think there's a great opportunity in the tools and guidance that we develop with the re-engineered version to improve and offer more when it comes to facilitation and guidance. So one of the frequently asked questions that we get is around performance standards and accreditation. And many of you probably know that when performance standards rolled out initially in 2002, it was in an environment without public health agency accreditation. That was true again with version 2 in 2007. What will be different in 2012 is that there will be public health agency accreditation in this country. So great opportunity to look at a complementary process for public health systems and public health agencies. However, the connections have been there from the very beginning. Public Health Performance Standards Program, the standards and measures there were a building block for the standards and measures that are seen in today's FAB accreditation standards. Some very current specific connections in the FAB standards and measures is that system building through performance standards is specifically mentioned in domain 4 around mobilizing partnerships. So there's a direct connection there. And performance standards can aid state and community health improvement planning efforts. That's an activity under domain 5 and also a prerequisite for accreditation application. So great connections built into the process there. So to go back to the four core underlying concepts of performance standards, they're based on the essential public health services, accreditation. This is just to line up exactly how complementary these tools are. Accreditation is based on the same, referred to as domains, includes an 11th around administration and governance for the agency. Performance standards focuses on the overall public health system. You've heard each of us say that today, but it acknowledges that the public health agency has a critical role to play as the convener, facilitator, hub, if you will. Backbone is another term to describe the role of the agency within the system quite often. Accreditation is going to focus on the agency, but we'll acknowledge that the agency has a critical role to play in fostering a public health system at the state and local level. The performance standards describe a level of performance at the optimal level, again, intended to give us something to strive for. Accreditation wants to set forth standards and measures that are attainable, so that folks can be there, are very close to there, but also have stretch opportunities to do more, to do better within the accreditation process. And both are intended to support a process of quality improvement. So future directions, I have a feeling I'm running slightly short on time, so I'll rush. Not so much rush? Okay. But future directions, performance standards, and accreditation, the intention is to have mutually reinforcing but not redundant tools so that communities experience strong public health agencies and strong public health systems that really are working in alignment to do the very best for achieving the health status and health improvement outcomes we all want to achieve in this country. So performance standards focuses on the system, accreditation on the agency, both move us toward doing better work. So sort of the exciting piece of this for those of us who are working on the re-engineering effort are our early ideas for what a re-engineered performance standards might look like. We're looking at four phases. The first phase being the organize and convene public health systems partners phase. So this is the phase where we identify who's part of the system, invite them to participate. One of the lessons that we've learned from some of our users is they've had a lot of success with actually developing a visual representation of who the system partners are and how they relate one to another, and how that may even change over time as new system partners come in, others move out, relationships shift and change. So in the re-engineering process, we want to take a look at what can we offer that would help that if in fact others have people have found it a helpful tool. Would others also find it helpful? What can we do to facilitate that very tangible product, if you will, of understanding system relationships? So phase two is what you're probably most familiar with the performance standards assessment process. The model standards review and system assessment using a streamlined instrument, so it's user-friendly, accessible to system partners, something that gets us as easily and quickly, but as meaningfully as possible to the identification of strengths, weaknesses, immediate priorities, and next step. So this piece of getting to those immediate priorities and next steps, we think, will help people make that transition from the assessment phase into the action phase more easily and quickly if we can build it into the process. So we move rather seamlessly into phase three, which is the system improvement planning and implementation, where one of three things would basically happen. Systems engage in systems improvement plans, straight away, the board develops a board improvement plan, or perhaps it's within the context of a state or community health improvement planning process that the next steps occur, but one or more of those three. And then phase four is just attention to sustaining action and achieving outcomes. So what do we need to continue to feed this process so that the work that's made in identifying strengths and weaknesses continues to be monitored and measured, and we continue to do good work and improved work, in fact. So those are the four phases that we're working on currently to define and develop. Our partners with AstoNatio and NALBO are convening work groups to give feedback and help drive this process. As version one and version two of performance standards, this will continue to be a practice-driven approach to this work. So hearing from those work groups, hearing from you all and getting your responses are really important. So if you want to give feedback, you have feedback, I'd love to hear that. And also invite you, if you're members of AstoNatio or NALBO or APHA, let those folks hear your feedback as well. I mentioned we're convening the work groups now. The work is beginning and will continue through 2012, when you may expect to have a new re-engineered version of performance standards, conveniently planned to roll out after the accreditation process, so you have a really good sense of how the tools fit together and will work together. In the meantime, I've mentioned and will mention again that performance standards remains a helpful and valuable tool for folks wanting to engage in performance assessment improvement or to take a look at what you can do to be ready for public health agency accreditation. So our tools are online, along with a lot of supporting resources. That web address is there for you, here for me. We have a monthly user call series that I would direct you to, as well as our 1-800 number and email inbox. We take questions, comments at all times. So I will end it there and turn it back to Les for questions. Thank you.
Well, you heard three very different but nicely aligned presentations, again, on where we are in terms of how the performance standards can be used domestically, internationally, and how they're being re-engineered and what the possibilities look like in the future. I learned a lot from what I heard today, and I think a strong argument for changing the concept of the 10 essential public health services to the 10 public health commandments. I think there's some real traction there for me. Within the last couple of weeks, I had the privilege and pleasure of facilitating the use of the local National Public Health Performance Standards, and I found the benefit and value very much to have been captured by the comments that I heard here. And I will offer one other modest learning from that recent use, is that if all the things you heard today are so important in terms of the planning and facilitation, but one of the other things that often isn't noted that's of very high importance for me is the recording that's done in the process itself. Because those notes, the ability to go back and look at where the strengths actually are within a model standard or a STEM question or a sub question are so crucial. But let me just stop there for a second now. We have a few minutes and open it up to the kinds of challenging questions our speakers expect from Dr. Scutchfield.
One of the keys, because these things are so complex, is to get a handle on the evaluation of NMPHIs, the management of the technical assistive aspects, because I think that would be very, very helpful to you as you move forward with those strategies. The third observation I would make is that you're going to continue to have struggles, and I would encourage you, I'm not sure how to do it, which is why, the press of FAP is going to make the National Public Health Performance Standards potentially increasingly irrelevant. And the standards that FAP have, which focus on the agency, not the system, are going to become driving concerns of the health department. And for, in fact, how you make that relationship work is going to be very, very key. Fourth thing I would comment is that clearly you've learned a lot, it seems to me, from what you have done at this point in time. I believe in previous work that I have done with the National Public Health Performance Standard, that we tried to do validity, reliability, re-iterator reliability, test, retest kinds of things. We didn't have the end to do it. You probably have the end to do it now. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage you, as you think about moving forward, to actually do more aggressive psychometric testing of the materials that you have available and try to make those psychometrically useful in terms of how they function and how they may work. So I would encourage that as well. The final comment I would make is that with all of this, and I'm a member of the FAP board, and Les will tell you that the FAP board meeting does not go by that I do not make exactly the same statement, and I will make it about all of the things we're using at this point in time. None of this is evidence-based. We sat down with our colleagues from NACHO and ASCO and ALBO and said, what do you think the standards ought to be? What do you think the measures ought to be? There has been precious little look at the extent to which the model, the logic model that was developed, that someone put up there, and I think
it was
follows. In other words, material, the inputs, performance, outcomes, activity. And I think that it's vitally important you go about the process of moving on FAP standards, anything else which others are going to be held accountable, but those will be driven by data which demonstrates that they do make a difference in outcomes.
Scotch, I mean, those were some excellent points, and they're certainly worthy of having some response. And I'm going to ask Dennis and then Teresa if they can to make, and Hood looks like he wants to make a comment as well. Do you want to go to the microphone?
I'll make a comment as an outside observer. The idea of having, calling them the 10 essential public health commandments is very logical. And I'll tell you why. If you look at the different organizations and the way I'm relating to the comment you made about the competence, the accreditation process, the competencies being linked to the essential public health functions, you have such a large diversity of institutes here and organizations that basically any organization can come along and develop their own process of measurement or of assessment. And there's a danger in that, because basically each organization will be watering their own tree. Philosophically speaking, it's like somebody wanting to do the best but not looking at what's happening all around them. It can become sectorial. I mean, the nurse is doing their own thing, the educator is doing their own thing, the physician is doing their own thing. And I think it's time to look at a more systematic kind of assessment. And I think that you can look at the concept, and you should try to adhere to several elements that are consecutive. I mean, like, you look at the four elements, and it was represented in the slides that you had on. you are going along the same logic. You take the 10 functions as the basis, and you can develop a system that would assess the agency function, and you would want everybody to adhere to that, because otherwise, it's all out there.
Scott, you had 5 questions. The answers were yes, yes, perhaps, hell no, and of course.
Thank you.
Well, your main point was that this, in fact, is a best estimate of what public health is about and where it can go, what it should do. I couldn't agree with you more, as you know, as being a huge advocate of public health systems research, that if we had a bucket of money, this thing would be, it would look a whole lot differently probably, and we would certainly have evidence-informed processes in place. But one thing I don't want us to do, you mentioned the irrelevance of the performance standards a la the advent of accreditation.
Potential.
That was my hell no answer, by the way. is that if we are so shallow in public health as to give up on that partnership part and not recognize its value and we simply retrench to the governmental side, I think we've made a big, big mistake. But that's my own.
I just want to comment quickly to thank you for your comments and assure you that they are issues that we are aware, sometimes painfully aware of, and we'll work through the process to address. On the last point that Dennis raised, I would just point to something that we've been talking a lot about recently about the importance of the system, and that's around one of the requirements for nonprofit hospitals in health reform legislation to do community health assessment and to partner with public health experts to do that. So that to me is a huge message for us and a driving issue for us to pay attention and work to make sure that our work around agencies and systems are both strong. So through agency accreditation, through performance standards, these are great tools to do that work right now.
Bridge what Scott was saying to what Dennis was saying and make the point that yes, if we were to labor over performance standards and accreditation standards at the depth at which we might have done in the past, that would be a problem. Reengineering to me sounds really promising. So it's a brand new day in that sense. So my point I would like to encourage you to think about is there's some fertile ground, even though it's considered an agency prerequisite. Fertile ground there for this re-engineering to bring that agency and system piece together at each point and provide guidance both to the agency and the system around those 3 prerequisites. So I think that's pretty powerful. The other one I wanted to just make a point of is model standards, you know, the optimal concept that has value within FED as well. It can inform as a guidance on documentation piece. You know, if you really want to aspire, you know, think of the model standards context of your documentation, same for those text boxes that are in the tool. So that's what makes the case. It really is a great opportunity for re-engineering to bridge this program.
The best quality improvement instrument is not very small. It's the Bible.
So there you have it. Thank you for those statesman-like comments. And when you think about re-engineering, there are a lot of unemployed engineers right now, so this is a great chance to put it to work. Mike, I know you had a question. Do you want to?
Yeah.
And I think you're going to get the last one.
So. Great presentation. One thing that struck me, though, is that I think a couple of people in this room were in an earlier session where Peggy Honore presented the new HHS public health quality improvement report. And the second presentation was about the community benefit standards. And so the question is, what's the relationship between those things and the things we're talking about today? Theresa mentioned just one thing at the very end, that's community benefits.
Would someone like to, Theresa, you want to make a comment on that? Well, you know, some of these things are really nice. I think of the entire planet as a series of Venn diagrams. And here we have the opportunity to take the tax code, which is actually the largest quality improvement document on the planet, slightly longer than the Bible, probably more often read. The community benefit aspect of what hospitals and others have to do within the Internal Revenue Code, the opportunities within health reform to really think about focusing on prevention if we're able to maintain the Prevention and Wellness Trust and some of those other opportunities that health reform has begun to fund and put to the forefront, and then think about how literally today, 50% of all the investments that are made in the actual public health expenditures aren't made by governmental public health. They're made by those systems partners. And so if we really want to think about the very nice sort of capacity process, impact, and outcome changes that we're thinking about to improve health status, we've got to bring all those three circles into some very nice alignment in that Venn diagram. So let me close with that. Thank all of you for coming to this session. Look forward to seeing you throughout the rest of the meeting. Let's hear it again for our panelists, by the way.